What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today is a leading candidate for most improved player, and his team is tearing up the league at the moment. He is Desmond Bane, second-year guard for the Memphis Grizzlies, the Red Hot Grizz. They've won 6 of 7, all since Ja Morant went down with a knee injury. They just beat the Lakers with LeBron and Russ and AD all on the court. Des Bane had 23 points in that win, including a dagger three down the stretch. Phenomenal game from him. The Grizz are playing great D. They're getting great production from everyone else. And in fact, Des Bane himself, since Ja went down, is averaging 18.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and shooting nearly 48% on three. Bane, if you recall, was 30th in the 2020 draft. And in that draft class, he is now 5th in scoring. He's turning into a really nice player and a great story. We will get to that in just a moment. Before we do, a quick reminder, please rate, review, subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on the YouTube feed as well. Just search for Sports Illustrated Podcasts. We are there. And be sure to hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Desmond Bane is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by Desmond Bane. Des, how are you? Welcome.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining me. I know I am catching you right after what was going to be an off day that's not an off day. You guys just beat the Lakers and you've won 6 of 7. Why is Coach bringing you in on the off day? After you beat the Lakers, I would think like you guys should just get, like, I don't know, the next 3 days off.
that's that Grizzly mentality, man. I mean, win, lose, or draw. We're going to keep working.
That sounds about right. That's what I would expect, right, from the Grizz and Grind franchise. And I want to ask you that because this winning streak that you guys are on, or winning 6 of 7 all since you lost Ja, it's been about defense. It's been about a bunch of guys who are, you know, kind of overachiever types like yourself. Is grit and grind still kind of the mentality there? We are obviously far beyond the Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Mike Conley era. Is that still as much of a theme there as it's ever been?
I would say grit and grind's been a part of my mentality, my whole life, from the way I was raised to, my basketball career. And then, you come here and we got some guys that, we're overlooked a bit. Dillon Brooks played several years in college. Ja Morant, started out at Murray State. We got a lot of guys that have just been around the block, and, we carry that chip on our shoulder for sure.
It's a really interesting thing because I don't think anybody sets out to put together a team that way, but then you start finding these commonalities, and sometimes there is a theme, and there definitely is with your group, and there, I think there was with the prior Grizzlies group. Is it talked about, Des, or is it an unspoken thing that you guys were all kind of overlooked in your own way? And even Ja, you mentioned it, he was second overall pick, but he had been overlooked for much of his, come up until that point. Is it actually a spoken thing that you guys talk about with each other? Is just understood?
Yeah, I would say it's more understood. I mean, it's something that doesn't really have to be brought up. With our group, we don't really need a lot of, extra motivation and things. It's pretty internal. So I would say it's kind of an unspoken thing. But one thing that, that you're going to get with us is, a battle. We're going to play hard and play together. That's for sure.
So this stretch without Ja, he goes down with the knee. Now he's in health and safety protocols. Dillon Brooks is in health and safety protocols. First of all, I mean, have you talked to either of those guys? How they feeling? How they doing? I don't know if they were symptomatic or not, but how are your guys doing?
No, I mean, we're good. I mean, everybody's good. Spirits are good. We're in a good place.
And just the fact that you guys kind of went on this winning binge after Ja went down, was, tell me about how the discussion goes about, okay, look, you know, it's going to be probably a couple of weeks. Ja is the driver of so much of what you guys do. What has enabled you guys to kind of pull together and obviously exceed expectations for this stretch?
I mean, next man up mentality. I mean, we've had that, you know, for the whole time that I've been here with the Grizzlies. I mean, regardless of who's in a rotation, who's out of the rotation, the standard and, you know, the way we approach the games don't change. And it's obviously carried us to a bunch of wins. I mean, we just keep preparing the same way and, you know, keep working to get better. And, you know, you live with the result, go out there and lay it all on the line. And, you know, obviously we've won six of the last seven and hopefully can look to keep it rolling.
You've been a huge part of this streak. Your scoring, in particular, your three-point shooting, you hit basically the dagger three that sealed it up against the Lakers last night. They were at full strength. They had LeBron, they had Anthony Davis, they had Russell Westbrook. Just a couple of years ago, you were still, you know, a fan of the game, watching these guys. Give me a sense of, I know you've been in the league for a year plus now, but is there still a little bit of a sense of that, holy crap, I'm on the court looking across at LeBron, AD, Russ, Carmelo? What was that like for you last night? And especially, like I say, being able to come up big in the win against those guys.
I mean, you know, last year was more of that stuff for me. You know, obviously, you know, I was out here trying to learn and trying to grow as much as possible. And I mean, I'm still trying to learn. I'm still trying to grow. But, you know, now, I mean, it's a regular thing. You know, we're going up against stars, you know, night in and night out. So, you know, I just looked at it as another game. I mean, obviously, my family and friends are hitting me up, you know, talking about the game, talking about beating the Lakers and playing well against the Lakers and stuff like that. But, you know, like I stated before, we approach the game the same way every time. And, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Does LeBron say anything, or does any of those guys say anything to you along the way? You gotten any nice words of encouragement in the, or just, you know, a kind of attaboy kind of thing as the game goes?
Nah, I mean, they were strictly business, you know. I mean, LeBron, AD, all them guys, they walking off the court, exiting, you know, before the game's even over. I mean, so, you know, there were no words exchanged. I mean, and that's cool with me.
Yeah. I was watching that game. There was definitely a Laker fan contingent there. How noticeable is that? And is that, you know, how do you guys take that? I know the Lakers, look, their fans are everywhere. They're kind of, you know, a universal team, but how do you guys take it when you hear that big of a fan contingent for the opponent?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that's part of it. I mean, it's Los Angeles Lakers. You know, people follow them around like the damn Harlem Globetrotters. everywhere they go, they're going to have a crowd. But obviously, I mean, I would like for our city to, you know, be able to come out and support a little bit more. But, you know, you also got to understand the area. I mean, we've been hit hard with COVID over here. You know, so everybody's still trying to get back on their feet from that. But, you know, in due time, the arenas and the stands will be packed again, I'm sure of it.
No question. And yeah, obviously, you know, you guys are kind of early in this new era, right? Like the grit and grind era kind of wound down a couple of years ago. There's probably that, you know, that time between eras where fans are kind of getting used to you guys again. And I mean, the way you guys are playing now, and obviously pretty exciting young team, and Ja will be back soon. I'm sure that the fan support will kind of increase with that. There was another moment last night. The other thing I noticed during the broadcast, I think Brevin Knight at one point referred to you as the flyby king. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I've heard that a few times.
What is that? I think I mean, I understood what he meant in the moment, but how did you become the flyby king?
I mean, just that's kind of like my patent move. I mean, teams are, you know, scouting to run me off the 3-point line. So, you know, when they're flying at me, you know, trying to run me off 3-point line, just throw up a little shot fake, let them fly by and still get my three off.
So that was when I heard him say it the first time, that was Anthony Davis flying by. So that's a lot of size and limbs flying by, and you hit that. You did hit that three. How has that been for you, Des? Because you came into this league, that was the one thing that everybody knew for sure you had in your game was shooting. And then the criticism behind that, or the critique, especially during pre-draft scouting, is, well, he's not going to create a lot. He's not going to do. So teams are obviously going to try to take that away. So tell me about how that adjustment has been for you, because you're still shooting 40% from three. I think you're closer to 48% during this last seven game stretch. Have you had to find a way to keep finding, the space for your shot as the league has adjusted to you?
Yeah, I mean, continue to round out my game. I feel like that's made things a little bit easier for me. Being able to play on the ball, being able to play off the ball, being actions away from the ball, it's helped me a lot, open things up for me now. I can hurt the defense in more ways than one.
So I mentioned you, that pre-draft process and the critiques that came behind that. You're taking 30th overall. I think drafts, the prognostications had you anywhere from, late first to in the second round. Did you pay much attention to any of that? Do you still remember some of the critiques? Are you somebody who thinks about that stuff in terms of how it motivates or shapes the way you approach the game in the league?
I mean, it doesn't change the way that I approach or anything like that, but I definitely remember what they were saying. And I ain't never going to forget what they were saying. And when I, hopefully look back on it, I got a long career, hopefully accomplished a lot of things. I'll still remember what they had to say. That's just the type of person, type of player I am.
What are the ones that bothered you, or the ones that you thought were the most off base?
All of them.
I'm looking at one here. This is my colleague Jeremy Wu from Sports Illustrated. So I'm throwing him right under the bus here. This was his summation of you last year. While Bane doesn't come with a ton of upside, he's physically maxed out and isn't a great mover athletically. He might be a pretty useful role player right away. He's a dangerous shooter with underrated passing skills and a strong frame that should help him stay on the floor defensively, despite not being very quick laterally. And it goes on a little bit more and then talks about your wingspan. I think those are probably all the same. This is not to, I'm giving Jeremy some crap here, but I mean, there's everybody. I think all the draft analysts kind of had a similar summation of you. Is there a part of that actually where you're like, yeah, okay, I get that, but here's what you guys are missing?
Yeah, no question. I mean, no offense to Jeremy or any of those writers, but, it's a lot different when you're on the court. It's easy to type and write something and going off of what you see on the film or what you've heard from people. But, until you get between those lines, you can't measure a guy's heart. You can't measure, how they prepare for the game, what they do behind the scenes. So, all that stuff is just for, online clicks and media. I don't really try to pay too much attention to that stuff.
What have you already gotten better at? Like in terms of, on day one you arrive, you had certain things that you knew were going to be your go-tos. What have you already, added that you're most proud of?
I would say defense. Early on, that was something that I really struggle with. The speed of the game, the athleticism of the players, and now with Dylan Brooks out, it turns to me to guard the best players. So I feel like I've came a long way and I can still continue to improve.
And in terms of rounding out your offensive game, if people were wondering about your playmaking ability or your handle, are those all areas of emphasis for you? Are there specific things that you're trying to make, more into a strength at this stage?
Just like being able to play off of DHOs, play out of drags. I feel like I've always been a good cutter, good shooter. I became a better finisher, and I'm trying to continue to become a better finisher. Moving forward, I'll like to tighten up my handle so I can really play on the ball. For extended stretches. But I'm working on everything. I mean, I'm a young player. I'm in my second year in the league. I'm trying to get better every day.
Who's your vet? Who's been the guy who's been the most important voice in your ear among that roster?
I'll probably say Dylan Brooks. I feel like he really took me under his wing. When I first got here, I mean, both kind of underdog guys. He's a second-round pick who scratched and clawed and, has made a nice name for himself and, on the way to making a nice career for himself. So, obviously, I looked up to him. I mean, they were saying similar things about him, during the pre-draft process. Not super athletic, doesn't have a great wingspan, and it seems to be working out just fine for him.
What's the most important thing or the thing that resonated most that he said to you, that you think about the most or go back to?
It's just heart. I kind of came up and was cut from that same cloth, but, that's one thing that you can never lose sight of. I mean, once you lose that, you lose everything. You got to go out there and play with the edge each and every night.
So, as I mentioned, you were 30th in the 2020 draft class. I was looking up everybody in that class just ranking by scoring this season. You're fifth among everybody in the 2020 draft class in scoring right now. The only guys from your draft class who have a higher scoring average than you this season are Anthony Edwards, who, of course, was the number one overall pick, Cole Anthony, who was 15th, LaMelo Ball, who was, of course, third, and Tyrese Maxey, who was 21st. Were you aware of that? Are you paying attention to those things? And what does it mean to you that you are – if we did the redraft already, I think probably, you're in a little different slot. So what's it mean that you are scoring at a level with those guys?
It's good. I mean, I put the work in, the time's been put in, and now just, the results are showing. I try not to get too much into that stuff. Stats this, stats that. I mean, because, obviously the season is a roller coaster. It's ups and downs all throughout it. So I just try to keep my best foot forward and stick to the grind.
No doubt. You're also third in three-pointers made in your draft class behind only Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. And, of course, those guys have the ball in their hands all the time and get a lot more opportunities. So it's really remarkable. Did you expect this kind of success and this soon?
Who knows? I wasn't going to say I did expect it. I wasn't going to say I didn't expect it. Like I said, I've always been the guy to kind of just roll with the punches, so whether things are going good, things are going bad, I'm going to keep my same attitude, same approach. And, things are going well, and I'm thankful that things are going well, but, I'm not going to say that I didn't work for it, at the same time. So, I'm going to continue to keep working and hopefully there's more success to come.
So, Des, you came into the league at obviously one of the strangest moments in not just NBA history, but in recent history, human history, with the pandemic. So you come in the midst of that. You're playing almost an entire season with no fans in buildings. And the reason I bring it up is I think a lot of people were not sure what to make of last season, from whether it was young guys like you, where it's like, oh, well, he's shooting really well. And yeah, he shot well in college too, but it's different. There's no fans in buildings. And then we come into this season, scoring has been down early on. Shooting has been down. People are like, they're blaming the new ball. They're saying maybe it's because fans are back in buildings. There's all this stuff going on, but you seem completely unaffected by all that. Have we maybe just placed too much emphasis on all that? And tell me about the ball too, because I am curious. So a lot of guys, do seem to be struggling. Mark Cuban even said on Twitter the other day he thought the ball has affected guys. So how have you not been affected?
I mean, it's just basketball at the end of the day. I mean, I grew up, playing with basketballs that had no skin on them growing up, yeah. Playing on them outside in the park or whatever the case may be. Any basketball we could find, we just throwing it towards the hoop. So, I mean, I've never been one to complain about a ball or fans in the building. I mean, all that doesn't matter. I mean, we're out there to play basketball. Obviously, the fans are, you know, a big part of what we do and a big part of the NBA. But, you know, if you worried about a few fans in the building, then you got your priority messed up.
No doubt. It is interesting, though, to see, because I think there had, like, you can go across the league. You can see.
For sure,
right? Like, it's affected guys.
Numbers have been down, but, you know, I would just say that's just early season, you know, shooting woes. I mean, whatever the case may be, guys trying to find their legs, guys in new roles, new teams, you know, who knows? But, I mean, I think water always finds its level, you know, whether it's now or whether it's towards the end of the season. I think that, you know, those numbers will start to come up and even themselves out.
What was it like coming in as a rookie in the midst of a pandemic with no fans and buildings and everything else? Like, you have one of the more, your draft class has one of the more unique welcome to the NBA, you know, years that there could be. What are you going to remember about that season?
Man, I mean, that was like, now that I've played a season or part of a season with fans in the building and I know what the NBA is like, I mean, it's really honestly crazy what we went through last year, you know, from the testing to the no fans in the building. I mean, it was one of a kind. I mean, something that hopefully I'll never have to experience again. But, yeah, I mean, that season was nuts. I mean, it's hard for me to even put it into words how crazy it was. And then, I mean, the guys that were at the bubble, I mean, they tell me about that all the time and how lucky I am that I missed out on, you know, being stuck in the bubble. Yeah, it's just been a crazy year and a half, you know, for sports in general all around the world.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope that we don't ever have to experience that one again or anything even remotely like it. You're getting a lot of buzz for Most Improved Player. Obviously, there's a lot of season yet to go, but you know how we are in the media. We love obsessing about awards after, like, the first week of the season. And we're now, you know, more than a quarter way in. How are you feeling? Like, as a guy who you're kind of used to, like, your persona is like, okay, I'm overlooked. I get it. You know, I think you only got one Division I scholarship offer, which was to TCU where you played. Now you're getting all this buzz for Most Improved Player. Does that mean anything to you? Are you appreciate the fact that you're finally getting some notice?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's nice to you know, get some recognition, but you know, at the end of the day, I mean, like I've said before, we still got almost 60 games left. You know, so it's early for all that. You know, at the end of the season, if I'm in the running or receive the award, I'll be extremely thankful. You know, but right now I'm just focused on winning games and continuing to get better.
Does you talk with, like, the wisdom and the, like, the grounding of, like, a veteran, which maybe shouldn't be surprising in that you were a four-year guy in college. Do you think that's benefited you on some level? I mean, I know that sometimes from a draft perspective, from GM's perspective and scouts, they look a little suspiciously on guys who stay longer in school because they think, well, that guy, you know, there's a reason he didn't come out yet. It can be a double-edged sword, though. And coming out after that much time, you obviously do arrive more mature. Where do you think that has benefited you?
I mean, all across the board. I mean, with my nutrition, I mean, just learning how to be a pro. Nutrition, sleep habits, you know, study habits, the way that I study the game, the way I approach the game, my work habits. You know, I felt like I came into the league and had a lot of those things in place. You know, so now it was just about taking it to another level and, you know, learning the NBA game, the NBA system. You know, I mean, I think 4 years in college, I don't know what type of player I would have been if I would have left after 2 years, you know, 3 years, if I would have had an opportunity. I'm honestly glad and thankful that I stayed for all four.
I'm sure it's been written about, but what was that? Like, were there moments after year two, year three, had you considered coming out sooner? What made you decide to stay?
Yeah, no question. I mean, after my sophomore year, I led the Big 12 in three-point percentage, and we went to the tournament. I think I averaged like 12 or 13 points a game, and, you know, I thought I was ready. I mean, I just went to the USA camp the year before, and I saw the crop of guys that were going into the league, and you know, I feel like there was a role for me in the league. So, you know, I asked my coach, like, what do you think? And he was like, I think you need to come back. Next year you're going to be a junior, and that'll be the time to do it. So, I mean, my junior year comes around, and I tested the waters. And, you know, I was second round, two-way. You know, nothing was looking like I wasn't necessarily going to get guaranteed money for sure. So, you know, if I'm not getting guaranteed money, then I need to be coming back to school. And, you know, I came back to school and, you know, developed my game a little bit to some people that I could do what, you know, I know I could do. And, you know, the rest is history.
What do you think you gained most by tacking on that extra year or two? Where is your game now? You know, where was it on draft night that it wouldn't have been if you had come out 1 year or 2 years earlier?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty much a floor spacer, you know, role player, you know, my first 3 years. And my last year I was on the ball. I was coming off the screens. I was just a more complete player. And, you know, it's showing now. I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, a complete player now. Obviously, I can still improve and get a lot better in areas, but, you know, I'm working towards being a complete player at this level as well.
It's interesting because, I mean, look, we know everybody's got their own path. Everybody's got to do it their own way, and maybe what works for one guy won't work for the next. But, I mean, your story is one that I think really does show that, like, for some players, the longer college career does pay dividends. Like, you know, whatever you've missed out on the front end in terms of, obviously, contract, you're gaining in terms of your ability to just step right in and play a really important role on what looks like a playoff team, you know, very early in your career.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I can't understate how college, you know, prepared me for this. I'm super thankful I got to play for Coach Dixon, you know, tough-minded coach that you know, toughened me up and got me ready for 82-game schedule.
And what did it mean in your rookie year to be able to get a taste of the playoffs right off? I mean, you guys had to play your way in. It's looking like you guys might just, you know, you might just get there straight up as a playoff team this time. Did that have a value that, like, a lot of guys, they get bigger roles or whatever else on teams that maybe aren't going to the playoffs. They're going back to the lottery, but you got to actually get meaningful games at the end too. Did you get a sense of, like, what that means for your growth?
No question. I mean, that's what you work for. You know, I mean, you don't work for, you know, games in early November. Obviously, those games are important. But, you know, the goal of every organization at some point is to win a championship. And, you know, obviously getting that playoff experience in my first year playing a team like Utah specifically, who has such a unique style, has such a good crowd, good atmosphere. You know, I feel like I was really thrown into the fire, and I mean, it paid huge dividends for my growth.
A couple more before I get you out of here. We're recording this on a Friday. Saturday night, I believe, is the Zach Randolph jersey retirement. Big moment for the franchise and for the city. Do you know Zach at all? And do you have any favorite moments or anything about, you know, just watching him as a fan growing up? What does Zach Randolph, you know, mean to you, mean, do you think, to the Grizzlies?
Yeah, I mean, he grew up only an hour and a half, you know, away from where I grew up from. So before I knew him as a Grizzly legend, I knew him as a, you know, a dude from Marion, Indiana. Was tough as nails, you know, and then obviously he brought that here and, you know, had a historic career and has a great legacy. And I'm super, you know, happy for him. He deserves it, of course. Thankful for everything he's done for, you know, Memphis and for our organization. You know, it's going to be a special night.
Have you, what's your, I forgot, right? It's right. You guys have the Indiana connection. Has he been a guy who's been in your ear over the years? Has he been an advisor or mentor to you at all?
Not too much. I mean, like, I know of him and we've had conversations here and there, but, you know, we're not super close like that. But, yeah, I mean, well, I just look up to him more from a standpoint of he's, you know, from where I'm from and made a long career out of it.
Yeah, and he's a great guy. It's so funny. Zach is one of those guys who, like, he is just a teddy bear of a person, but obviously he is a different guy on the court. And I think he's one of those guys. I think it's fun, like, the way that fans got to understand him over the years, that, like, this is a guy who clearly big-hearted as well as obviously tough as nails on the court. So that'll be a fun night for all you guys. Before I let you go, you are in the city known for barbecue. Do you have a go-to spot?
Sure. I mean, you can't go wrong with the barbecue out here. I mean, I've been Central Barbecue, of course. Barbecue Shop, pretty good. I haven't been to Rendezvous yet. Everybody's been saying I need to go, but barbecue is everything out here.
No doubt. And Rendezvous, I believe, is a sponsor too, because I keep seeing their commercials on League Pass. So you got to go hit Rendezvous. They are the legendary spot. Desmond Bain, this has been phenomenal. Appreciate the time. Thank you for spending it. If you see him and have a chance, give my regards to Zach Randolph, to Zeebo tomorrow night.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Desmond Bain for joining me. Thanks to Jared Rudolph for connecting us. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Go subscribe to the Sports Illustrated Podcasts channel on YouTube. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter @HowardBeck.